This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff coming to you from the FedEx Studios. Steve and Dan still out on sabbatical slash hiatus or whatever the hell you want to call it. They're not here. However, they have sent us their thoughts on topics going on in the sports world. We'll get to that. And picks can pick them, which you have their picks for them, correct?
Yes, I do.
All right, so we'll get to that later on in the show. We will get into some news from the NBA and NHL as well. And, oh yeah, a big doing in Major League Baseball with a new manager in the Bronx. All of that is coming up later on, but as the opening music should be an indication to you, we will start with the NFL.
Like you've been conditioned for these past 14, 15 weeks.
Yep, it's going on 14 weeks now because we're going into week 14.
I think we did one just for the week before as we got the season ready. But whatever, go on.
Yep, so anyway, big news coming out of New York. Let's see. The Jets actually won a game, but that's not the huge story. The huge story...
It should be, because they're the better team in New York.
Yeah, that's true. They walked away with a 38-31 win over Kansas City. We'll get to that later. The big deal, though, is not only did the Giants lose to the Oakland Raiders on Sunday...
As they should.
Yeah, with the deplorable way they've been playing this year. They fell to Oakland 24-17 on Sunday. Geno Smith played like Geno Smith, which you expected. Any Jet fan could have told you that going into the game, and oh yeah, I did. Geno was ended up going, 21 of 34, 212 yards, a touchdown, no picks, was sacked three times.
I think he fumbled a few times, though.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, Geno fumbled twice and lost both of them. But the big story coming out of all of this, and it was all sparked by Eli Manning getting benched in favor of Geno Smith in the first place, both head coach Ben McAdoo and general manager Jerry Reese have finally been fired. And it was... the writing's been on the wall for both of them for most of the year anyway. Especially with Jerry Reese with the abomination of a football team he's put on this field. So you kind of knew it was coming. I think the benching of Eli Manning for Geno Smith, of all people, is kind of what set the ball in motion. And then the final bullet to the head for both guys was the 24-17 loss to the Raiders on Sunday. So... Reese is out after 11 years. McAdoo ended up going 2-10. Part of me does feel bad for Ben McAdoo. A small part of me does. Only because he was given a bag of crap for a football team this year by his general manager.
You can't really say that going into the season that they were going to turn out to be a bag of crap, though. The expectations were, all right, they were 11-5 last year, got into the playoffs. And with what we had last year, we can definitely only way go up because that's what happens. Everyone's a year older with a more year experience. Expectations rise. Hopefully we'll win that playoff game and whatnot. And that was the foolery of what Jerry Reese. Yeah.
Yep.
What Jerry Reese said had, because they also played a weak schedule last year. And their games were very close. They never really got over 21 points a game. And a defense bailed them out. And usually those games can go 50-50 either way, and the Giants just came out on the winning end out of most of those games.
Because of that defense, right.
Yeah, because of those defense and those small little details just were able to push them over.
And I think it was enough to... I think what the defense did last year, and because, as you said, it was a weak schedule, it was enough to cover the glaring deficiencies with that offensive line.
Yes.
Which, because the defense wasn't able to recapture that magic from last year, the holes became more glaring, and it was more of a realization that Jerry Reese and management hadn't done anything in the offseason going into this year to try to fix any of it.
Exactly.
Which is why the Giants turned out the way they did. And Jerry Reese has spent the last 11 years as the general manager of this team.
The problem was that Jerry Reese, even though he did get Odell Beckham, he has his own head case issues and stuff like that where he's all about himself. But the problem was that he has not been good at drafting players.
No. He hasn't.
I mean, besides Odell Beckham, since like 2011, how many players do you know that he drafted are still on the team after they won their Super Bowl?
The only one that I can think of off the top of my head is Eli Apple, the cornerback. It's the only one that I know immediately outside of Odell that is still here. And it still somewhat had an impact on this football team. That's the only ones I could think of anyway.
Exactly.
Like, if anybody else, if any other Giants fans know there, let us know. Facebook.com/SallySteveOnSports and Twitter at @S_S_Sports.
Get the conversation rolling.
Please, let's do it. But, you know, now at this point, it's actually kind of a moot point with both guys gone at the moment. Where was it? Reese is being replaced by his interim, or on the interim basis, by I think one of his assistant GMs. Where is it? Kevin Abrams is taking over as the interim GM. And Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, is now taking over as head coach as they get ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. With, by the way, Eli Manning back under center.
That's just that whole situation.
Was completely pointless.
Yeah, the more I hear about it, like, you know, my opinion when I talked about last week.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely has changed more because I didn't hear that Ben McAdoo said that Geno gave the Giants a better chance to win.
No, he said what he said was
it was along those lines.
Well,
though,
yeah,
right?
The quote was when they named Geno Smith the starter, what the Giants were going to try to do is set Geno up in a position where he gives the Giants a possibility to come away with the win. He didn't say that Geno was the best option. He said they were coming up with options to give him a chance to win the game.
Okay,
on Sunday against the Raiders.
I feel like. So, yeah, that now is changing my opinion again because just the wording, like, I feel like everyone just took that, all the hot takes were saying, oh, why, like, Geno doesn't give them the best chance to win when McAdoo just said, like, we're going to prep him up to give him the best chance to win.
Yeah, and,
okay.
And like I said, Jets fans.
It basically just ruined my thought because it seemed like McAdoo was just saying, oh, we're going to see Geno because he's going to give us the best chance.
I'm like, no. I said that last week. I'm like, Geno's not going to give you the best chance. Jet fans can tell you he sucks as a starting quarterback. Weapons are not.
Yeah, very mediocre.
Yep. And I've made this argument on this show and other shows. The biggest reason why I feel Geno Smith has failed as a starting quarterback, he's got all the tools in the world to be a fantastic QB. He just doesn't have the mental makeup to do it. And at times on Sunday against the Raiders, I caught part of the game. I wasn't able to watch all of it, unfortunately. At times he did show like poise and maturity for a quarterback, and at times he was showing the same mental mistakes of like overthrowing receivers, not leading his receivers to openings to be able to make catches, stuff like that, which you need to be a successful quarterback in this league. Now, again, had they decided to go with Davis Webb, and I talked about this last week, had it been Davis Webb as a starter and you decide to stick with Davis Webb the rest of the way, that would have. I still think Giants fans would have been a little bit annoyed by that, but it would have made more sense because the Giants are now 2-10. It's, do we need to draft another quarterback in the upcoming draft? Do we have the future of the team here already? Can we groom this kid properly under Eli with a little more tutelage?
Yeah, with 1 month to go, why not just throw him out there?
You're 2-10. You're going to miss the playoffs anyway.
It's easier said than done.
Oh,
because
I know that.
Maybe they still don't feel like he's ready to be out there.
Yeah.
Even if it's a lost season. Like, if they don't feel he's ready, then why do you want to throw him out there?
Right. Well, that, too, was also the same argument the Jets made with their young starting quarterbacks, and I'll get to that a little bit later on. They don't plan on playing either one this year, Petty or Hackenberg.
That's kind of sad that those two haven't really
been given a chance.
Well, given the chance, but also spawned to take over that quarterback position.
Right.
That a 38-year-old Josh McCown has been holding the realms for.
And McCown was able to lead them to a win over Kansas City on Sunday. Do you want to stick with that, or do you want to go back to the Giants?
We'll stay with the Giants because that's still the bigger story, though.
Yeah. Well, again, the writing's been on the wall the last couple of weeks that both guys were going to get ousted, Reese and McAdoo. The question was it going to happen Sunday? Was it going to happen on Monday, or is it going to happen on Black Monday at the end of the season, which is the first Monday?
I think the situation just became too toxic.
Yeah.
For the Giants to hold back
any longer. And,
yeah.
Well, there was also reports floating around social media on Sunday that said that there was a better than even chance that Ben McAdoo was going to get fired on Monday. There was no word about Jerry Reese, but they had said there was a good chance on this past Monday that McAdoo was going to get canned anyway, which he did. Now, the million-dollar question is, had, for argument's sake, the Giants beaten Oakland on Sunday, you think it would have saved Ben McAdoo's job in another week, or do you think he would have been fired anyway?
I think he still would have
been
gone.
Fired, right?
Yeah.
I think the same way. I'm like, you know what?
Too much of a political mess, like a PR mess, I should say. Not political.
Yeah.
Just too much of that was going on. Too much
politicking, too much peer.
Too much fan anger. There's no way he would have come back alive.
Out of that,
figuratively.
Now, if the Giants were, say, 10-3, I don't think this would have mattered. And, you know, wouldn't
have made a difference. Winning heals all wounds.
Exactly.
Course.
But, you know, Steve and Danny also gave their thoughts. If you could find Danny while I'm going after.
They were fortunate enough to.
Yeah, so while Jeff's looking up Danny's
such good
thoughts,
things for us.
Steve's thoughts on the Giants are as follows. Obviously, they weren't on the same page in Giantland. After that ridiculous benching of Eli, just a day later, McAdoo and Reese are fired? What? Don't get me wrong. They both deserve to be fired. But this is just strange. How can Mara say he was on board with the decision to bench Eli and then fire the two men who made the decision a day later, and now Eli's back in the starting lineup? This is all handled in probably the worst way possible, but at least Eli is now back where he belongs. That's Steve's thoughts on the Giants, but you know what?
It's definitely like if you want to put it like a Jet way of doing things.
Yeah, and I said that last week. I'm like, this seems like something the Jets would do, not the Giants, because the Giants usually handle things a lot smarter. And for the record, I know, I saw this the other day. It's interesting to note that this is the first time since 1976 that the Giants have fired a coach and a GM midseason. If they've relieved the coach and or general manager of their duties, they usually do it at the end of the year. This is the first time in 41 years that they've fired a coach and GM and or GM middle of the season or at any point during the regular season.
How about that?
Yeah. But, you know, originally, I think what happened was when the decision was made last week to sit Eli, I don't necessarily think that was McAdoo and Reese's decision. I think they had a bit of a role in it, yes. But I think predominantly the word was coming down from above them. I think it was coming down from the Mara family to bench Eli. And
you
again,
think so?
Well, that's the rumblings I've heard.
Do you believe it?
I don't know at this point.
It's a yes or no question. Do you believe it?
Not entirely, no.
Because?
I think McAdoo was trying to be able to try to save face a little bit. I think partially they wanted to protect Eli because he is 36 years old. And they wanted.
I felt like it was a way to just protect him from all those injuries and that horrible offensive line and all that type of garbage that the Giants have out on the field. Because why would you want him to be subjected to that over and over again?
Right.
But then again, why would you want to subject a rookie to that pulverizing
defensive
team
line
that he's facing up against?
And Oakland's still one of the best defensive teams in football.
Yeah, so it's like a very lose-lose Kobayashi Maru situation.
Yeah.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thing.
Right, and you know what?
Because if he was in, you know, you would have heard fans on Sports Talk and host doing these hot takes saying, why is Eli still in there? We really need to see the kid get in. And even if the kid was in, it's like,
why is this kid getting killed?
Exactly. So
it's exactly the double-edged sword. You're going to get burned. You're going to get hurt either way.
Yep.
And it's pretty much a lost cause in this season anyway. The Giants, I think, want to put
it
in
the rearview
mirror.
And also the problem was that Jerry Reese and McAdoo also had brought in a very horrible atmosphere in the locker room as well.
Yep. I think that was mostly Ben McAdoo's doing.
Well, I mean, also Jerry Reese, because, you know, going back all the way to 2 years ago when Odell Beckham Jr. basically missled himself into Josh Norman.
Yep.
And they kept him on the field because the Giants, that was the Giants' best chance to win. And it sort of gave them less accountability. There was really no accountability ever brought up to any players, really, besides Eli Manning, when Eli Manning was basically doing everything he can the right way.
Yeah. And
if you want to put it that way
Yeah, no, and it's the one guy who's done everything by the book, if you will, is the one who has to get benched for it.
It definitely seems like that McAdoo also wasn't accountable for anyone else.
He wasn't.
Besides Eli.
Exactly. The only one who seemed to have any accountability at all in any phase of this football team is your starting quarterback, which is one reason why I think the guy might be ticketed for Canton, Ohio when his career's over. So, I mean, let's face facts. The Giants have been a dumpster fire this year.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
They have been. They're 2-10. They got to face the Cowboys now on Sunday, who are fighting for their playoff lives, by the way.
The first time since 2005 that both teams are facing off at a 1 o'clock game. Apparently, that's a very big travesty.
Well, no, it is a big deal. They were supposed to be the marquee game. They were supposed to be on at like 4:25. But I think because the Giants are 2-10.
Yeah, they got flexed out of it.
Yep, and the Cowboys now sit at 6-6, and they're fighting for their playoff lives at 500. And where are they? I'm just double checking myself here. Where are they?
Especially with the Philadelphia loss.
Yeah, the Eagles have come back down a little bit. They're tied with Minnesota for the best record in the NFC.
What is it? 10-2.
And as it sits right now, the Dallas Cowboys are in 10th place in the conference. The last playoff spot belongs to the 8-4 Carolina Panthers.
That's more realistic than going for the division, but
yeah, the division's long gone at this point.
Exactly.
Philadelphia's pretty much got that locked up. They should have it locked up, I believe, within the next couple of weeks.
Or and, next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's next week because Dallas is the second place team.
Yeah. So if
basically
Dallas loses, Philly's got it locked up.
So yeah, there's that, and
I mean, we'll start doing playoff scenarios on the blog, ssunsports.blogspot.com. As we get closer and the playoff scenarios start presenting themselves a little bit better, we'll start doing that every week.
But basically, if Dallas loses, every game for Dallas is important.
Yeah, it's basically Dallas has to win out.
Exactly.
They don't have a choice anymore.
One more loss and Dallas is done.
Yep. And the schedule for the Cowboys, you're not going to be intrigued by this.
No, not really, because it's Dallas. I don't care.
Well, I kind of do.
Okay, go ahead then.
So, Cowboys' final four games are at the Giants, at the Raiders, hosting the Seahawks, and at Philadelphia to end the season. So, just picture this. The Eagles start to stumble a little bit, and the Cowboys get red hot and win the next three games over the Giants, Raiders, and Seahawks, and they could go in with the division title on the line on New Year's Eve.
There's no way.
Yeah, I can't see Philly slipping up that badly either, but just picture that.
The way Philadelphia has been playing,
trust me, I know. But just picture that. How great would that be for ratings for the NFL if it's Cowboys, Eagles, division title on the line?
But
last
just
game
imagine
of the season.
If Philadelphia loses this game against the Rams and the Cowboys expectedly win against the Giants.
I know.
And how the Cowboy fans like, yes, we have a few more weeks till Zeke gets back. Let's just keep on winning. Things could happen. Now we're three games back behind the Philadelphia. Oh, my God. Shut them up.
Philly's going to beat the Rams. That'll end that.
I mean, I don't think the Giants will. But
yeah, but well, the Giants play Philly next week, the week after that.
Yeah, so honestly, Philadelphia wins. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I mean, well, hey, at least we can say this much. There's one team in New York that surprisingly hasn't embarrassed themselves too badly. And that's the New York Jets, who are coming off the 38-31 win over Kansas City. They're now 5-7. We all got that Kansas City game wrong. And
yeah,
I think we all
you all picked Kansas City.
Yeah, we all failed to take into account that the Chiefs had lost five of the.
No, you did. You did. You just thought that this would be the game that Kansas City would bounce back.
Well, the offense showed up. I mean, look at what Alex Smith did. He went 19 of 33, 366 yards, 4 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill played out of his mind, 6 catches, 185 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I was listening to that game on the radio a bit.
Yeah, I was watching the game at work.
God, that third quarter.
Oh,
I know. When the Jets basically took 10 minutes just for a field goal.
Yep.
Next possession that Kansas City has, the first play of their possession.
Turn it over.
It's a touchdown.
A stop pass, yeah.
I was like, turnover,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, wow.
No, it was like a 75-yard play or something like that.
Yep. It's amazing. It's Kansas City that's been well documented is one of the highest scoring offensive teams in the NFL. There's no denying that at all. It's just the defense couldn't stop a beach ball. And when you had Jermaine Kearse torching you for 157 yards, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. Again, the Jets have a lot of good pieces in play and just need more time to develop, more time to mature. And hopefully you'll find that right quarterback.
Yeah, and the 79-yard bomb you're talking about came with 5:13 to go.
Okay, so that was 79.
79 yards to Tyreek Hill for the touchdown.
Yeah.
I could play it. For some reason, that play slipped my mind. Because I was so enthralled with the 2 touchdown catches that Kelce had to start the game to make it 14-0 Kansas City. As soon as KC went up 14-0, first thought to pop into my head is, oh, crap.
Yeah,
this is going to be a route.
Yeah,
I thought
the Jets faced the adversity, came back, had to deal with more, like, after that long drive, only got a field goal, to only lose their 7-point lead. You know that, and I think they also lost that lead as well.
They did. It was,
yeah.
Kansas City was up 14-0. Then it was a touchdown run from Bilal Powell and Josh McCown tied the game.
Yeah.
So that got the Jets back into it.
Yeah, yeah. But then the Jets took the lead, and then Kansas City took the lead back, and then the Jets took it back for good. I believe that's how it went. Yeah.
Kansas City went up 17-14 on a field goal. Bilal Powell scored from 11 yards out.
Yeah.
21-14. Kevin Zero hit the field goal after the 10 minute drive. Then you had Tyreek Hill, 79-yard touchdown to tie the game again. Kevin Zero, 2 field goals.
Okay, so yeah.
A Hill, 40-yard touchdown pass to cut it to 31-30. And then...
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of things at the end, like where Kansas City basically blew it up defensively.
McCown, and then McCown with 2:15 left from a yard out.
Yeah, so it was like bunch of like...
It was missed assignments, basically, by
Kansas City.
Missed assignments,
but I think there was also, like, roughing the kicker.
There was.
Okay, so,
It was too many. It was, it was that last drive that led to the Jets winning touchdown. There was at least 3 different holding calls.
It was, on third down or fourth.
It was on third and goal, and it kept resetting the play for the Jets.
Even though you could say the Jets were lucky to win that game.
A little bit, yes. But sometimes luck's involved in football.
Luck's involved, and also the other team just is... undisciplined.
Derek Johnson.
And you take advantage of those undisciplined plays by your opposition, and that's what happens. The Jets took advantage.
And Derek Johnson had himself a solid day defensively, but got called for at least 3 holding penalties on that last drive that led to the McCown touchdown that gave the Jets the lead for good.
Yep.
And by the way, former Jet Darrell Revis now has a job. He's playing defensive back for Kansas City and got embarrassed at least twice on Sunday. And
he's still on the team. I thought he would have been cut after that game.
No, apparently Darrell Revis still plays for Kansas City.
Okay.
I mean, the guy's a Hall of Fame defensive back. I'm not taking that away from him, but now I hope Kansas City realizes why the Jets don't have him in played anymore.
Revis Island is very populated right now. Yeah. Full of people that can just run around freely.
Pretty much. And I never thought I'd say this, but the Jets could go to 6-7 after this week because they're playing a bad Denver Bronco team.
Yeah.
Who don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, right.
Like, I feel bad for Vance Joseph, the head coach of the Broncos. Because he's got to deal with all this crap. He doesn't have a quarterback. And the Denver Broncos haven't really found the guy to take over for Peyton Manning after Manning won the Super Bowl. Now, granted, I don't think they had the replacement set for him anyway when Manning was on his way out the door.
And also, you got to say the defense won the Super Bowl.
They did. I'm not denying that. Like I admit it. I was in a bit of a state of denial the night the Broncos won the Super Bowl because I thought, yay, this is all on Peyton. He's getting... the last send-off, but then I realized, wait a minute. Peyton was all right. The defense won them the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And the defense has looked average at best this year.
Yep. And so, I mean, we all thought that Denver was going to be gangbusters after that great hot start. And Denver had that whole bad luck of quarterback play, and it just trickles down to everywhere else.
Yeah, to be fair, at least they're not the Bears. At least they're not the Chicago Bears, who despite the best efforts of Trent Cohen, did you see that punt return he had against San Francisco? Probably the lone bright spot for the Bears. Trent Cohen caught a punt at about the 39-yard line of San Francisco. It was his own 39. He's getting chased down by like 7 49ers defenders. He runs all the way back to his own 24, turns the corner, has a lane, takes off down the field, and scores.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm using your bottle as an example. He literally did this. Goes backwards, turns around, sees the opening, goes right upfield and scores.
Jesus.
There was literally nobody touched him. Caught the punt, nobody touched him, ran up the field and scored.
There was also a play that you just reminded me of this weekend with Russell Wilson.
Okay, what happened?
I forgot what it was exactly, but he basically was running down, and before he got to the line of scrimmage, did like a shovel pass to his receiver as he was getting ransacked by like 3 players.
Yes, I heard about this. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard about it. Yeah, you're right. That was pretty good.
It's just your description just made me think of
that. Yeah, but hey, back to the Bears and 49ers game really quickly. I feel bad for the Bears, but at the same time, I'm like, you know what? Jimmy Garoppolo helped San Francisco get the win. Granted, it was Robbie Gould who accounted for all 15 points for the 49ers in a 15-14 win. But still, the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo actually played pretty decently, he ended up trying to... I know I had a stat line here somewhere. Went 26 of 37 for 293 yards, no touchdowns. But Jimmy Garoppolo, I know it's one game, but the Niners may have something at quarterback now. And all it cost him was a measly second-round draft pick to the friggin' Patriots.
A high second round pick, though.
Yeah, but still, if all it cost you was a high second round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo, and there's a distinct possibility this kid might turn into being your franchise quarterback, good on San Francisco for that. For being able to pull that trade off, man.
Good on Garoppolo for taking advantage of the situation.
Amen. So we got that going on. We got two teams now. Actually, if I'm looking at the standings correctly, I think we now have four teams sitting total at 10-2 in the NFL right now. And do we do? We got Minnesota and Philly in the NFC. And no surprise here in the AFC, it's Pittsburgh and New England.
Yeah. Now here what a boring AFC this is.
I know. But the Pats are going to be without Gronk next week.
Oh, yeah, that whole horrible
the suspension
decision that he decided to do after
ramming,
the end
ramming
of the
Bills defender's head
into
the turf.
I saw that. That was just like,
what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm like, Gronk's like one of the last guys I would expect that to come from.
Yeah, honestly. I don't know why. Honestly, it's like a brain fart occurred in his head.
Yeah.
And he decided to say, oh, okay, just after what happened, yeah, it's like, oh, you're going to do that to me? I'm going to do this to you now.
No, it's like, Bills player must die. Whap.
Well, no, it was because, like...
It may have been a retaliation for a cheap shot.
Yeah, something... Oh. Not cheap shot, but I think it was like an interception or something. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember all the details.
Right.
I just saw him standing there. The opposition was down. And Gronk decides to just headbutt him.
Yeah, I don't know
if you're... Do a diving headbutt into his back and injured him.
Right. Well, speaking of that, I don't know if you'd heard the rule change that the NFL is possibly even remotely considering.
Oh, really?
There's a rule change that the NFL is considering. They'll probably bring it up in the owners' meetings, I think, towards the end of the winter, beginning of the spring, I think. They're going to try to adopt an adaptation of the targeting rule in college football. And this has a lot to do with what happened with Juju Smith-Schuster and Vontaze Burfict in the Bengals-Steelers game on Monday night. And that if you target a defenseless player, doesn't matter whether it's offense or defense, if you're caught targeting a defenseless player during a game, it's not only an automatic ejection, but I also believe they're experimenting with the possibility of a one-game suspension for it.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah, but at the same...
I would say so.
Yeah, no, I like the rule, honestly, because maybe it'll get defensive players to change their thinking about hitting a guy.
Well, sometimes you got to think, though, is that the defensive player is going for that good... You see that he's going for that good tackle, and then all of a sudden the offensive player decides to just change his angle, and now it looks like it's a targeting thing, where you blame the defensive player. But it's like, he was going right for the way he was taught and supposed to, and...
The receiver was going to change. I was going to make... You beat me to the punch.
So maybe you're thinking that maybe the receiver decides to change it on... I don't want to say on purpose, because he's doing his own thing to just try to dive and move out of the way.
I think what happens is most defensive
players... But it's like
players,
you got to think of where the onus is. And,
right.
And that's not the defensive player's fault most of the time.
And I think what happens is most defensive players...
Or a handful.
When defensive players are going to make a hit, their goal is to line up and go shoulder into chest and knock the wind out of you. But I think when a receiver sees that defender coming, to try to be able to soften the blow, I think he tries to lower his shoulder, and he lowers his shoulder too much.
It's also,
and the head's the target.
Well, it's also about teaching these players that the helmet is not supposed to be a weapon.
Yeah, very true.
I remember hearing that saying about letting these kids learn and see from these NFL players not to use your helmet
as
a way to tackle or knock someone down.
Yeah, right.
Or things like that. It's just made to protect you from concussions and all those other types of head traumatic issues.
Which I think now, because the speed of the game has changed over the last 20 years, and hits are a lot more violent, and it's just because players are a lot faster and they're a lot stronger than they were 20 years ago.
Yes.
So when you're going at full speed, and I've seen stats and reports about this, it's that players colliding in the NFL going full speed is like getting into a car accident for normal people like us.
Yep.
So when you're getting hit that hard and you're going that fast, the brain's not supposed to get smacked around in the skull like that. It's not.
Nope.
The body's not designed to take those kind of hits.
All that pressure inside the brain spinning around. Nope.
Which is why I think a lot of CTE has developed in players. So I think it's just...
Yep.
That's the way athletes are conditioned. I think with the technology today, they might be able to redesign helmets to make helmets safer, I think. I don't know if it's possible,
probably
but it's something
to look
into.
It's most likely in the works. It just has to be tested out and vetted and all that type of nice scientific gibberish.
Right. So, yeah, other news coming out of New York. Do you want to get to this? Why not?
Well, no, because we still have to talk about the good old Guttle.
Guttle?
Goodell.
Oh, yeah, that. Goodell. Roger Goodell's salary has gone up. He has been given a contract extension.
For taking the most public abuse ever by a commissioner in sports, he gets rewarded with a $200 million contract for 5 years, $40 million a year. My God, why does he have this?
Because the NFL...
I just explained it, but it's like, it's still why. Why? Why?
I can tell you why.
It's more of a frustrated why than really asking why.
Why? Cha-ching! Cha-ching! That's why. The NFL has made $13 billion more. The NFL is now a $13 billion a year business, and the numbers have gone up since Goodell took over for Paul Tagliabue in 2006.
I understand that, but still.
And to your point, the only owner who even remotely objected to this was Jerry Jones.
Well, there was a small faction with Jerry Jones. I mean, he also had Robert Kraft, who had his issue with Brady and Deflategate and all that stuff.
Yeah, there is that.
But yeah, the problem is that because even though they created so much money and all that stuff, he's been a public nightmare.
He
has no real relation with the players. All the fans don't like what he's doing.
Nobody does.
But yet somehow the NFL keeps raking in money, so that's the bottom line. And that's why Goodell still has a job and gets an increase, because he gets put up with all that type of stuff while also being judge, jury, and executioner for the NFL players on suspensions.
It's mind-numbing, honestly, some of the stupidity that he was able to get away with. It really is.
Yeah, it's like, no matter what he does, it just you can't be held accountable, because the main thing is that he makes the owners money. And you told me about the stat of how all 32 teams are, like, in billion-dollar franchises now.
Yeah, there was a stat that Forbes came out with. They had done a list of the most valuable franchises in all four of the big sports: baseball, football, basketball, hockey. And I'm saying this for a reason. The most valuable franchise in the NHL is the New York Rangers, $1.5 billion. The cheapest NFL franchise right now of the 32 teams is the Buffalo Bills, valued at $1.6 billion. So the cheapest NFL team is worth more than the most expensive NHL franchise, which is a statement to both, A, how pathetic the NHL is, which is...
I don't want to say it. No, you don't want to say how pathetic.
It shows how wealthy the NFL has become.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. You can't say that the NHL is pathetic.
Well, by comparison, money-wise, to the NFL it is, but the NFL has become that popular, and the NFL's numbers are down, too. The NFL numbers are way down.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see how this goes and how the money comes in, you know, for this, because this is probably the make-or-break contract for Goodell.
Yeah.
And if the results start to be continuing this downward trend, hopefully they'll try to get Goodell out of the contract.
Yeah, well, we shall
see. I'm saying that on purpose, so if you hear me saying Goodell, it's on purpose.
Yeah, I know. So we shall see, but we shall see. And speaking of new contracts, the Yankees have themselves contracted a new manager. His name is Aaron Boone, the man responsible for one of the biggest home runs in Yankee playoff history.
And not responsible for any management at all, because he has no managerial experience.
Yeah, ever since Aaron Boone retired, he spent the last 7 years sitting up in the broadcast booth as an analyst for ESPN, has no managerial experience whatsoever.
Which apparently doesn't matter at this point in MLB.
Yeah, because MLB has now become so analytically driven, they don't give a damn what the manager does. They don't give a damn about the eye test, which Aaron Boone has said in his press conference when he was introduced as Yankee manager yesterday, that he still plans on taking some of the analytical numbers that Yankees upper management gives him. He's going to take that into consideration, but he's also going to go off the eye test as well to see how well his players are doing and decide whether or not he wants to keep them in the lineup.
Exactly, because these players are not robots.
No, they're not.
As we've said over and over again, they're people, and they have, you know, they could have good days or bad days, and, you know, there's always variables from the norm. Like, if a pitcher is doing much better than expected, you keep him in. You don't follow by the numbers. You are still paying attention to him, but if you see him doing good, you ride that out until you really see it happening.
Right.
And also, what I also heard is that he's going to pick, you know, really want to get to know the players even better So he knows what makes them tick and what motivates them, which is a good thing that Joe Girardi did.
Yeah, and that's a sign of a good manager, is getting to know your players really, really well so you can know what buttons to be able to push. Because pushing the buttons for Aaron Judge, the way you would with him, might not necessarily work well with a Gary Sanchez or a Brett Gardner. You have to be able to know how to deal with individual personalities. And I think Aaron Boone might be able to do that. Honestly, is it an upgrade from Joe Girardi? I don't know.
Yeah, this is more of a wait and see. I agree when I heard that this is a whole, let's see how this plays out. But the problem is the Yankees are in a win now type of situation where their window to win multiple championships has opened.
But that's the Yankee way, though. And I've said this for a long time about the Yankee organization. Their mindset is, if it's a year without a championship, then it's a wasted season.
It's also that's just bull, because if you didn't have a season to begin with, if I'm taking this literally, then you're not going to make any money.
Right. And so, that's, I think, the other goal if you own a professional sports franchise, is to not only win championships, but win at the box office, too. Your goal is to make money.
Yeah. So don't say that it's a worthless season. You're for 162 games, providing entertainment to fans.
Exactly. And Steve also gave his input on the Aaron Boone signing as Yankee manager. He says, and I quote, "I don't see how Aaron Boone is the right man for the job, but Cashman knows way more than me, so who am I to question it? At least I won't have to hear him and his dumb stories during Sunday Night Baseball. And with that young and great Yankees team, Boone would have to do a really horrible job to screw this team up," unquote.
That's, again, where the whole experience comes in. Is he really going to be experienced enough to do all that type of stuff, where if he had like a Terry Francona or a Joe Maddon type of manager, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, and I saw this as kind of an interesting note, and it's now that Aaron Boone is the 9th active manager in Major League Baseball to be managing a team that he once played for. Because Boone played for the Yankees.
Good for him.
The other guys are Kevin Cash in Tampa, Alex Cora in Boston, Craig Council in Milwaukee, Terry Francona with the Indians, Dave Martinez with the Nationals/Expos, Mike Matheny in St. Louis, Paul Molitor in Minnesota, and Dave Roberts of the Dodgers. Now, some of that has translated from playing careers to successful managerial careers. Alex Cora is going to be MIA because he just got the job in Boston. But Terry Francona is probably the best example of that. If you know baseball well enough, you're going to be a success.
Yeah, and baseball is all what Aaron Boone really knows. That's his life.
Yeah.
His whole family have been baseball players.
Yeah.
His grandfather, his father, his brother, who has his own issues. But that's besides the point.
In more ways than one.
Yep. So we'll see how it goes. I just feel like what is your realistic Yankees expectations for them this season? For it to be successful and, you know, to give Aaron Boone props as the new manager of the Yankees.
Well, I think the bar was already set incredibly high last year with the fact that they went to Game 7 of the American League Championships. And had Joe Girardi stuck around another year as Yankee manager, the bar would have been set, okay, World Series or nothing. But now with Aaron Boone stepping in and taking over his first managerial job ever, I'm starting to wonder, all right, play out with this young Yankee team, you already set the bar incredibly high for yourself. If Aaron Boone can get them back into the playoffs with this team, I think it's a success. He will exceed expectations for himself as a first-year manager if he gets the Yankees back to where they got last year and even exceeds that by sending them all the way to the World Series. But if he can get them to the playoffs, that'll be a great year. If he can have them finish above 500, that's a solid year for a first-year manager. I don't see it happening where the Yankees are going to fall out of the playoffs and finish right at 500 at 81.
Yeah, so if the Yankees end up with the 85 wins, and they miss the playoffs for the first-year manager.
Good year. I think that's a good year for a guy who's never done this
before. I would like you to say that to Yankee fans and hear their reaction saying that that's unrealistic.
They're going to lose it, though, because Yankee fans, again, have high expectations. And so would I. I would expect the Yankees to make the playoffs, honestly, because of what they had last year. And, again, it depends on how the rest of the winter pans out and what they decide to do with free agency and bringing back guys like CeCe Sabathia, possibly adding somebody like Bryce Harper, who's a free agent. I mean, nothing's really happened in free agency.
I don't think Harper's going to be with the Yankees with what the core the Yankees have.
No, I don't see it.
So I don't know why you're trying to say something like that.
I know, but I mean, that's, you know.
But my thought is that the Yankees, for a successful season, show us consistency with all these players that had career years. See if they can sustain it, win the division, and play very smart baseball all the way to try to the World Series. But if they get ousted in a tight divisional round, then you know what? That's what happens. Those are the breaks. You're playing against the top teams in baseball, and that just happens. I mean, the Yankees weren't supposed to win against Cleveland, and look what happened.
They beat Cleveland.
Exactly. So that's just the way. It's just the way I don't want to use any stupid phrase. But that's just how it happens in baseball.
Oh, that's baseball, Susan.
Okay, well, you said it.
Yeah, I had to. All right, so do we have time for one more story before we get to football picks? All right. This one story comes out of the world of hockey, and that is the fact that as of today, there could be a possibility for the NHL to expand to a 32nd team in the city of Seattle, Washington.
I'm glad that they finally filed for expansion.
Well, what happened is, this is a story according to Hockey Rumor and Trades, which also gets all their information from TSN in Canada and the NHL. Story goes, the NHL has agreed to consider an expansion application from the city of Seattle, Oakview Group, which is led by billionaire David Bonderman, and filmmaker Jerry Bruckheimer, have been permitted to conduct a season ticket drive to gauge the market with a tentative start date of the 2020/2021 season. Commissioner Gary Bettman has said that the fee has been set at $650 million for Seattle, which would be the 32nd team in the NHL, and it's up from the $500 million that Vegas paid to join the league this year. Seattle Mayor Jerry Duncan said on Wednesday that, well, he also signed an agreement with a developer for a $600 million renovation of Key Arena, the home for any potential Seattle NHL team. Seattle is the 14th biggest media market in the United States and the only one in the top 25 without an NBA or NHL franchise. And there had been, I saw this pop up the other day, as soon as this became public knowledge, that what might be some potential names for the team in Seattle. The
two ones that stuck out. I don't care about the names right now.
Seattle Fist Throwers was one of the names that came up.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. NHL and NBC had posted that on social media as one of the choices for possible picking the name for the Seattle team. The Seattle Fish Throwers.
No. No.
I agree.
No. No. The fish... No.
Seattle Kraken had also come up as a possibility.
No.
All right, that's why I said it. I wanted to gauge your reaction to it.
Hell no.
Too stupid?
Yes.
All right, then. But yeah, you
know those, I hope those were joke names that they just wanted to throw out there, not actual considerated names. No way.
Yeah,
No way.
I know.
The Kraken? Hell no.
Yeah.
You know what you say without it, but the Seattle Kraken? I don't know.
Well, with that
garbage.
Yeah, but what do you expect? And with that being said, it's time we pick football games?
It's that time, yeah.
All right, let's do it. This is Sully and Steve on Sports. Pigskin Pick'em. Turn down for what?
Things have once again tightened up. As week 13 ended, we have a tie with Matt and Steve getting two correct predictions. Steve only had one, so the movement closes in yet again. Matt got the Tennessee game right as Tennessee won 24-13, a point differential of 11, and Matt was the highest out of all the three, so he automatically gets the win there. No one got the Kansas City game right. Matt takes a 2-0 lead as he picked 10 points with Oakland over the Giants, and it was 24-17, a 7-point differential, so Matt was the closest without going over. Now Dan gets the next two games. He got the Carolina game right with New Orleans winning 31-21, I should say, and that was right on the mark, so Dan gets that. And he got the LA Rams game right with the blowout, 32-16, a 16-point differential, and that means Dan was the closest without going over. And in the last game, as I said, it was a tie because Steve got that game as he picked Pittsburgh to win by 5, and the score was 23-20, a 3-point differential. so Steve gets a charity point for nothing. And so, as I said, the standings are closer. Steve stays at 18, and those two first-place tie points that Matt got brings him up to 18, ties Steve for first place, while Dan is now back behind them both by 3 points.
All right. So what else we got this week on the docket?
This week's games are, first one up, the woeful New York Giants hosting Dallas.
Honestly, it doesn't look good for the it's not going to look good for the G-men, especially with what Alfred Morris did last week for Dallas. I'm taking the Cowboys to win this one. They'll get the win by 10. Cowboys win it by 10.
All right. There you go. And Steve, he agrees that Dallas will win, but it will be a closer game, and it will be by 3.
All right.
Meanwhile, Dan goes against you two and thinks the Giants, with this new regime change, will spark them to pull out a victory and win by 3.
All right, so we have a little bit of diversity to start this week off. Jeff, next game.
Turn down for what?
And that game is the Jets going to Denver. Will the Jets build up on this win and get their 6th win, unexpected 6th win, or will Denver finally figure things out and actually get a victory?
Not going to happen. Denver is going to go down at the hands of the Jets because, and I picked against the Jets last week because of how much Kansas City had struggled. And I'm actually going to pick the Jets this week because of how badly Denver has struggled. I'm taking the Jets to win it by 10.
And just watch, you're going to be wrong again.
Yeah, I know. But I'm throwing it out there anyway. Jets get the win this week.
And you are agreeing with Dan, both with team and prediction score.
Wow.
He's picked the Jets to win by 10.
All right. So do we have diversity with this next pick for Steve?
We do. He picks Denver to win by 3.
All right, so we have diversity so far through the first 2 games.
So basically with this, if the Jets win, no matter what, you two will get the tie.
Yeah, and if not, Steve gets the win outright.
Yep.
Jeff, next game.
So screw point differential for this one.
Yeah, this is just win or it's either Jets or Broncos win. You know what, Jeff, next game.
Yes.
Turn down for what?
Here comes the randomizer.
Yay.
Now, this is probably a randomizer first for this season. The games that they picked was so horrible that we had to cut one out to
really?
Add in a better game.
Wow. I think that's the first time we've ever done that with the randomizer.
Maybe.
We all have right.
I don't know if we really want to listen back just to figure that out.
No, let's not. Let's not.
So the first game the randomizer chosen was the great game, great high action octane game of Cincinnati hosting Chicago. I can hear the enjoyment.
Bengals get the win. Bengals win by 7. I can't even go into describing that one.
Well, here's the thing before I lock it down. Dan also picked Bengals by 7. Do you want to change it?
Bengals by 10.
Okay. You think it's going to be even worse then? Good for you. As I said, Dan picks them to win by 7, while Steve decides to pick not the Bears, the Bengals to win by 4.
All right, so we have differential on points in this game, which will be beneficial.
I think it was just pretty easy for all of you guys to pick Cincinnati. There's
yeah.
no way that the Bears would win.
No. Jeff, next game.
Turn down for what?
The next game up we have is Washington facing against the L.A. Chargers.
Hi, Chief Snyder's, and where
in
is it?
In L.A.
All right, that answered that question. Because of what happened to Washington against Dallas... And because the Chargers have been an inconsistent football team, but I think they might figure it out this
week. I know, two inconsistent teams facing off against each other. What are the odds?
Yeah, I'm going to take the inconsistent team that resides out on the West Coast. I'm taking the Chargers to win this one. They'll win it by 3.
Do you want to do it again?
Fine, Chargers by 6.
Do you want to do it again?
Are you kidding me? Chargers by 7.
Do you want to do it again? No. I say that because Dan picked the Chargers to win by 3, while Steve picked the Chargers to win by 6. So there you go. That's why I keep on saying it.
Fine. I hate being a dick, but Price is Right rules. I'll take it by 7. Next game.
Well, there's really no wiggle room because you have the ceiling, which means if the Chargers win more than 7, you get the win.
All right, fine.
So, you know, you're not really screwed over.
All right.
You just gave...
I know what you mean.
Yeah, you just gave yourself a better chance to win.
All right, next game. Turn down
for what? This one is another barn burner of a game.
Uh-oh.
The 0-12 Cleveland Browns are hosting the Aaron Rodgers-less Green Bay Packers.
And the Green Bay and the Cleveland Browns will do something that has never been done in the history of the NFL. They will become the first team ever to start 0-13 on back-to-back seasons. I'm taking the Packers by 14.
Do you want to do that again?
God. Why?
Because Dan picked the Packers to win by 14 as well. Do you want to do it again? Do you want to say the Browns by 14?
No freaking way. I'm not picking Cleveland.
You're not going to give Cleveland the chance?
Hell no.
No Believeland for you?
Screw that. Packers by 10.
Okay, that works.
Does Dan have the ceiling on this game?
Dan does have the ceiling on this game because Steve picks Green Bay to win by 5.
5? What is Steve with these weird-ass picks?
Well, I mean, if it was Aaron Rodgers,
it would have been
all three of you would have gone with a higher prediction.
Yeah. All right, Jeff. Final game. Let's go. Turn down
for what? Now, this last game is the one we decided to change.
Okay.
Because the Holy Randomizer really decided to go out of its way and give us the Indianapolis Colts versus the Bills.
Oh, God, that would have been horrible. Thankfully, you decided not to go with that one. What'd you pick?
I know, I told this to Dan, and he says, these games suck ass.
He's right.
Yeah.
They do this week. So, did you actually give us a better game this week?
I certainly did.
What is it?
It is the biggest matchup so far of the year as the Rams host the Eagles.
That's gonna be a fun game.
I saw that game and was like, watch, this is not gonna get picked. Lo and behold, of course not.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. It's gonna be, honestly, that's probably the toughest game to pick.
Yeah.
Philly by a field goal. I'm taking Philly to go 11-2. The Rams are gonna put up a good fight.
Even though it's in LA?
Even though it's in LA, Philly gets the win by 3.
All right. Well, Dan also picks the game to be won by 3 points.
Okay.
But as you notice the theme here, I didn't ask you to do it again because Rams...
He picked the Rams by 3.
Yes. He has picked them to win by 3.
And Steve?
Well, Steve, here's the thing, Matt.
Yeah?
You have the ceiling between the two.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Steve has picked Philadelphia to win by 1.
All right, so if it comes down to Philly, if it's 3 or higher, I get the win.
Exactly.
And if the Rams win, we're screwed.
No, Steve only gets
the win if it's Philly by 1.
Yes.
I don't know why
Steve picked Philly to win by 1.
He
could have picked Philly to win by 2.
I don't get it.
At least give him some margin for error, but this has to hit the nail on the head because it's by 1.
I know.
Wow.
All right, on that note, Jeff, shut this the hell down.
Yes. Turn down for what? So, there goes another randomizer week. Another week of horrible games because it's the randomizer.
Yeah.
All hail the randomizer,
right?
All hail
the magic randomizer.
Yes, magic randomizer. Let's not pick the good games. Let's just pick the ones that everyone doesn't want to watch. But, we have to watch because it's football.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Bless the randomizer. Curse the randomizer.
It is the randomizer. I curse the randomizer repeatedly.
Yes. Good old randomizer. Anything else you want to talk about? I never really gave Dan's thoughts of anything.
Yeah, why not?
I didn't read them.
Go ahead.
As for the Yankees, I'm not so sure how I feel about Boone. I only know him for the 0-3 versus Wakefield home run and then getting injured in the offseason and the main reason the Yankees got A-Rod. Boone can't mess this up. The Yankees are for real and are favorites to win the World Series. So he feels like it's a World Series or bust. About Ben McAdoo and Reese. It's about time the Giants pull the lever and hang both Reese and McAdoo. Oh boy, death. Both are complete embarrassments to the NFL and the world itself. The Giants can now move forward, but unfortunately have to clean up the dead carcasses of McAdoo and Reese.
Yeah.
Dan had his thoughts on the Seattle team that we brought up.
Okay.
It's basically that he's all for it, and he feels like the name should be the Seattle Coffee Grinders.
That wouldn't be too bad.
It would be horrible. And the arena would be sponsored by Starbucks, yeah. Which I can see, even so though it's a Key Arena.
Yeah.
Unless Starbucks decides to buy out the Key Arena just to name it the Starbucks Arena.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Unless they are really close on developing a new arena for that hockey team.
No, I think they're just going to completely remodel Key Arena.
They've given up on the whole new arena situation?
I think so.
Oh, and here's Dan about the Knicks. The Knicks are coming back to reality. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's right, they are.
I mean, they're still a young team. You can't really expect much.
I know.
I mean, against the rest of the league, you knew that the Knicks weren't going to really do much. You just got to keep on seeing them with grit and attitude and dedication and all that fun stuff before anything can really progress forward.
Indeed.
Otherwise, they'll just be a dead fish.
Right.
So, anything else you want to say, Matt?
Not that I can think of. I've run out of stuff tonight. It's been a long day. So on that note, we have run out of time for this episode of the show. I'd like to remind everybody again that you can follow us on various forms of social media, facebook.com/SollySteveOnSports, Twitter @S_S_sports, or use the #SollySteve, either way works. At both the Facebook and Twitter pages, you can get all your updates on the sports world, get all your updates on this very show, and since we are an interactive program, ask us questions. We'll try to answer them as best we can each and every week here on the show. We've got the sports blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. All the latest episodes can be found on iTunes, and everything else can be found on SoundCloud. Just search Solly and Steve on Sports. Hit download, and you can take us with you wherever you go. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, or whatever that you don't want to leave on social media, fine with us. Email us, SollySteveOnSports@gmail.com. For everybody working hard behind the scenes, for Third Mike, Dan, Steve, and Jeff, I'm Solly. We'll be back same time, same place, same channels next week. See ya.
Escúcheme usted mi canto, Maracaibo, para que tú lo bailes.
Mi son Maracaibo,
para que tú lo bailes.
Mi son Maracaibo,
ah.
Mi son Maracaibo,
para que lo goce.
Mi son Maracaibo,
para que lo bailes.
Mi son Maracaibo.
Cuando me puse a cantar,
Maracaibo,
mi canción en la mañana,
Maracaibo.
Cuando me puse a cantar,
Maracaibo,
mi canción en la mañana,
Maracaibo.
De Santiago hasta La Habana,
Maracaibo.
Fue cuando pude gozar,
Maracaibo,
para que tú lo bailes.
Mi son Maracaibo,
que tú lo goces.
Son Maracaibo,
que tú lo...
¡Ya!
Son Maracaibo.